Good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, middle of the week, June the 8th, 2016, 12:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears. Do want to give you a little reminder that coming up tomorrow on the program at 12:15, we'll be joined by Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, who is a possible candidate for vice president for Hillary Clinton. So we will ask him about that tomorrow. So don't miss that. Thursday at 12:15, Senator Sherrod Brown on this program. But today, we are going to finish a conversation with a gentleman I like a whole lot that we started last week at this time, and 40 minutes just wasn't enough time to finish that conversation because we were talking about very serious issues. Alzheimer's, dementia, depression, dieting, things that are all very important to the world we live in today. He was is a medical expert, doctor, and was on many TV shows over the years, the Today Show, and did things for ABC as well, and many, many books that were great successes, and we're happy to welcome him to these microphones again today, Dr. Art Uihlein. Dr. Uihlein, how are you?
Thank you, Scott. As I said earlier when you contacted me, never better. And that ain't bad for an 80-year-old guy.
No, not bad at all. And what is the secret to this, being in a good mood at 80 and having a good life?
Number one, I think it does begin in the head. Mental attitude is absolutely critical because bads of aging can literally destroy your health. Number two, I got to be honest, genes count. You need to pick your parents carefully. I've been lucky, and although I've had some medical issues along the way, I've had none capable of taking me down. And I think the third critical thing is you got to work at it. I go to the gym 5 days a week. I don't like the gym. I hate the gym, but it is what keeps me bouncing up and down and walking with a spring in my step. I look at, you know, friends of mine the same age who are just shuffling along and who have no more medical problems than I have, but who simply haven't done the work.
What do you think that block is for certain people?
Oh, I wish it was as simple as that, and I wish life were as simple as that. I think it's just the accumulation of things all lifelong. I tried to figure out. I have a little problem. I tend to binge eat a little bit at night. It's just not uncommon for me to do that. I'll hit the refrigerator, and even when I'm not hungry, and clean out some wonderful cheese in there, or it doesn't even matter what's in there. And I sat myself down about a week ago and tried to figure out, why am I doing this? And crazy as this sounds, Scott, I believe, and I'll find out soon, because now that I have this insight, I should be able to overcome this issue. I believe it all goes back to a jar of maraschino cherries 70 years ago. Hmm. 70 years ago, my mother came home from work and started preparing for a party. And she was in the kitchen working, and all of a sudden I heard her say, Arthur, have you seen the maraschino cherries? And of course I had seen them. I ate them all. I ate the whole bottle, little bottle. And she broke into tears. And she broke into tears because, A, we had company coming that night. B, we were poor. And C, she couldn't afford another bottle. And I have never gotten past those maraschino cherries. Crazy as it sounds. So you ask the question, you know, what blocks us, what drives us, what pushes us to do stupid things, what pushes us to lash out in anger at someone who says something innocuous? I think it's the accumulation of life's experiences. And I think some of it is temperament. Some people are born self-directed. My kids were completely self-directed. I needed someone to nudge me along. So that, to me, by the way, is what makes life so very much fun.
You know, this is interesting because a lot of times we meet angry people, people who do not have a good disposition when it comes to life. People, you know, I've ran into people 80 years old who say, I've got nothing left to live for. Do you think that's something that happened to them when they were a child?
I think some of it does go back to that. And some of it has to do with the way they live their life. If you live a life that is focused on things, for example, material things, and that's all you have as a source of satisfaction, and you get to the age of 80, and you can't afford those things anymore, and even if you have those things, let's say you've got arthritis or something, you can't use those things, and you see nothing else to live for, then I can understand getting in that place. I could never get in that place. I can go in my backyard and find things that will amuse me for an hour. My neighbors laugh at me because every year I pull the little seed pods off our birch trees. I pulled 5,700 little tiny seeds off the trees. And my theory is that if I don't allow the energy to go into all of those, they go into making the trees taller. And, of course, everybody asks me, how come your trees grow so fast? I say it's the pods. But it's a meditative activity. I can take joy out of counting blades of grass, each one a little miracle. So I think some of it is just the materialistic aspects of life.
You know, Doctor, when I knew that you were going to be on this week, and we did talk some about depression last week, and maybe this is not necessarily along those lines, but, you know, I think to be in radio, you have to be curious about everything. So, this past week, two things struck me, and I'm going to bring both of them up here. Personality types. One personality type that I encounter is a person who always thinks, even if there's really no evidence to that point, that there is something going on. People are trying to pull the wool over their eyes. What do you think that type of personality derives from?
There's a spectrum. Once again, I can't give you a simple answer. I would say there's a spectrum of possibilities. At the one extreme end of that spectrum is poor mental health. And the worst form of that, of course, would be schizophrenia, someone who literally has paranoia as a function of a mental disease. At the very opposite end of that is someone who... whose family life was broken, whose parents never delivered on a single promise, whose friends were not true friends, they exploited them, and who simply lacked trust. So the question is, how do you figure that out? Most people spend zero time thinking about those issues. I'm delighted to hear you and I are in the same boat because we can wander off and spend an hour wondering, gosh, why did I react that way? A psychiatrist friend of mine, I once called him and I said, boy, I did something that really embarrassed me. I just blew up on a good friend recently who did, I was angry. And it was inappropriate. There are such things as appropriate anger, by the way. We should be very angry about all the injustice in the world. But I blew up inappropriately. And my psychiatrist friend said, Art, it's the voice behind. What do you mean, the voice behind? He said, you were not reacting to what your friend said to you. you were reacting to a feeling that his comment triggered from your past. Try to figure out what that had to do with. And indeed, it had to do with the way my father spoke to me. And he triggered a very deep feeling. My father was a cold and distant man. I think he loved me, but he never once told me. And I think that's the feeling my friend triggered. So there's that saying about a life, I don't have it right, but it's something about the life unexamined is not worth living. And I take great joy in wandering off by myself. I sit in the backyard and I just wonder, why did I do that? Sometimes there's an answer, sometimes there isn't. But I find the process of exploration just fascinating.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, and I think we all know people like this, and maybe some of us are people like this, who have what we would refer to as friends, people we talk to quite a bit, but a lot of times we argue with them, and if we're talking to somebody else, all we do is complain about the friend we're arguing with, but yet we still remain friends with them. We still talk to them a lot. Is that unhealthy? And where does that sort of derive from, do you think?
Well, this is a really good question. Is that unhealthy? It is unhealthy if you allow if you don't recognize a friendship that is not truly mutually rewarding, that is not equal in terms of giving and taking. By the way, I have a category of people that I call friends. It's a very small group. They would lie down, they would throw themselves in front of the bus for me. And then I have a very, very rich group of friendly acquaintances. And these are people, for example, I just answered one of them, people who are at the opposite end of the political spectrum from me, and we argue constantly about politics and issues, but we argue civilly, we argue thoughtfully, we always try to one-up each other intellectually. Not in a mean way, not in a dishonest way. And I think it's possible to sit down and ask yourself the question, is this person really my friend? Or is this person an acquaintance? Do I want to maintain an acquaintanceship with someone I don't like? I actually do that with a couple of people I really don't like, but we find each other stimulating. How's that for a concept?
It's interesting. Well, you know,
life is interesting, Scott.
It certainly is. Well, the other one, and it's kind of interesting because somebody, God willing, we're all going to be young and we're all going to be old at some point in our life, age-wise.
Right.
Now, that being said, if somebody is, let's say, 30 years older than you, they're always going to be 30 years older than you. But I've heard many times when you say something to them when they're depressed or unhappy, and you bring something up and you say, well, you could do this, you could try this, you could do this, and the answer is, well, you don't know how you're going to feel when you're my age. Well, we're never going to be at that point. So how do you deal with something like that mindset?
Well, let's back up a little bit. I don't tell people what to do. You can't tell someone what to do because that is an honest statement. You don't know how I feel. See, I don't think it has anything to do with age. It is impossible to put ourselves truly in someone else's shoes. I have a very, very dear friend, an African-American physician, who is just an incredible doctor, a wonderful human being, an angel. And she grew up under in segregated circumstances. She was the first African-American woman accepted at a major residency program in 1987. That's just 30 years ago in an American city. And she and I talk about race a lot. And the one thing I have learned from her is that I can never, never truly understand her experience because I am not black. I have not lived that life. I can empathize with her. I can intellectually understand and recognize much of what she has gone through. But there is no way I could ever have the experience of growing up in the slums of Detroit and being called the names she was called. So that doesn't mean I can't respect her feelings. I can't try to understand her feelings. Just as I ask her to understand how I feel growing up with a father who could not express love.
Well, that being said, if somebody of an older generation comes to you and is unhappy, what can you do?
Listen, take his or her hand and hold it and listen. Ask that person just to talk. What is going on in your life? At the end, and this could go on for quite a while, be prepared, because if you are truly a good listener, then you will follow with questions that may spill out one of the most fascinating histories you've ever heard. And when the talking is done, ask, how can I help?
It's an interesting way to go, and it's a fascinating, the mind is absolutely fascinating. And that being said, a subject we kind of got into last week at the tail end, didn't nearly spend enough time on it, is something that seems to be affecting more people now, dementia, Alzheimer's. Now, maybe it's because people are living longer, I don't know.
It is because of that, Scott. Dementias and Alzheimer's disease in particular increase in frequency with age, and our population is living much, much longer. So yes, we are seeing many more cases.
What in your opinion is the difference between, okay, I'm in my 70s, let's say, and I'm forgetting keys, I'm forgetting appointments, but, you know, I remember directions, I remember people's names. Is that dementia? Or is that just old age?
Well, and sometimes it's young age, too. Dementia, the definition of dementia, it basically has to do with the fact that you have lost enough cognitive power so that it begins to actually disrupt your daily life. It disrupts your ability to function, your ability to work, or to care for yourself. Now, there are mild degrees of disruption. So if I forget where I left my keys because I was frazzled when I can, I dropped them on the counter over there, is that dementia? No, that's just inconvenience. That's lack of focus. That's not paying attention. If I get lost on the way to the market, and I've been going to that market for years, and all of a sudden I find myself on a strange street and I don't know where I am, that's a sign of dementia. By the way, if I may, we usually wait until the end of a discussion about a disorder like Alzheimer's or dementia to give people a site, a website they can go to, or a phone number to call. And there is, in my opinion, one of the very best health sites in the world is the site run by Alzheimer's Association. And if we could, I'd like to give your listeners the URL for that website. Could we do that
now? Go right ahead.
It is really simple. It is alz.org. 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 And it is truly one of the best organized websites. It is filled with information about Alzheimer's, what the warning signs, the risk factors, what can you do, treatment, how is it diagnosed. And I encourage anyone who has questions about dementia to visit that website if you have not already done so. Very, very helpful.
It's interesting, and I hope people do, because I think when people's parents and grandparents start to get to that age and they notice a change in them, sometimes it's hard for them to understand what's going on, because maybe it's not forgetting to go to the store. Maybe it's forgetting to take their medicine. Maybe it's forgetting getting out of routines in their life that they did all their life. Something they enjoyed, they no longer have interest in.
Right. Well, among some of those things are warning signs. There's a wonderful spot on that website called Know the 10 Signs. They give 10 warning signs of dementia, memory loss that disrupts daily life, challenges in planning or solving problems. So you can't follow numbers, you can't add columns. Difficulty completing familiar tasks at home, at work, or at leisure. That's not new tasks. Getting confused with time or place. Now, you know, I have called some Thursdays Wednesday. You know, I just wasn't paying attention. I don't have dementia. But people who are constantly confused about time or place, that's a warning sign. Trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships, that is actually very characteristic of Alzheimer's. New problems with words in speaking or writing. By the way, an important sign is forgetting something that you just learned, the inability to retain new information. I can remember what happened in 1944, but I can't remember what I just learned about something yesterday. Misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace steps. And if I have lost, I can't find my eyeglasses, it's not hard for me to close my eyes, remember where I last wore them, walk to that spot, and that's where I'll find them. So the inability to retrace steps. Poor judgment. That goes a little later in the process of dementia. Withdrawal from work or social activities. That is a troubling sign, and you pointed that one out. People who just don't want to go out anymore, don't want to be with people. It is a sign that they're not coping well with people. And then finally, changes in mood and personality. Someone who was always bright and cheery and now becomes dark and withdrawn. That's a sign to get help, to at least explore the diagnosis.
Is paranoia a sign of this?
Paranoia is a sign of more advanced dementia. It does occur in the middle or late stages of dementia, yes.
Is it possible for somebody with dementia to still operate a car, handle things in that direction, but just have a terrible time with everything else?
It would be hard to imagine someone who has a terrible time with everything else, meaning the dementia was truly interfering with other aspects of life, who could safely drive a car. I can imagine someone with mild dementia, driving a car and getting by. My brother died of Alzheimer's disease, and for 3 or 4 years, he functioned well enough. Although there were warning signs, he functioned well enough to drive his car to the airport, park it, fly to Berkeley, where he owned a restaurant, run the restaurant, get back on a plane and come home for the weekends. Now, during that process, he lost his, he bankrupted himself because, he would find his way to the airport, but he would also pay bills twice or three times, or he would not pay them at all. So it's, think of this as a progressive problem that begins to slowly, gradually begins to spill over and infiltrate all aspects of life. The critical thing is to catch this early. Initially, my sister-in-law and their kids just said, oh, well, you know, that's just a normal thing of aging. He came home, he laughed about how he got lost on the way to the airport. No, that's not normal. That is not normal, and it should call for a consultation with a family doctor or a neurologist.
Now, that being said, if you are the family, because this is a big part of it, if you think something is wrong, can you talk to the person about it? Do they understand they might be having a memory problem? Because usually, if you're trying to take somebody's keys, or you're trying to maybe get a nurse in to help them with their daily activities, the person wonders why. And can you say that I think you have a memory problem? Can you include them in that? Do they understand that?
Wonderful question. And the answer is yes and no. Number one, I think it's very important to ask the question. And my brother, during the early stages, was extremely aware of his memory problems. Extremely aware. Found them very upsetting. Personally knew he was, quote, once he looked at me and he said, Art, I am losing my mind. And he was. He was very upset about it. Some people get angry about it. They don't want to be losing their mind. They go into stages of denial. They get angry. Others are grateful that you have recognized it and want to help them. So I think, like everything else, it is a spectrum, but I do think it is critical to talk to the person about that. If you are a family member and you really see signs that concern you, you've got to find some way to convince the affected family member that there's nothing to be lost by getting a consultation.
What is the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's is a form of dementia. In fact, it is a disorder that causes the most common form, probably 70 to 80% of all dementia cases. Alzheimer's has a very specific microscopic finding. We see the deposition of amyloid protein, certain proteins. Once the person has died, there are absolute physical signs of amyloid in the brain, and now, with refined testing, they're able to diagnose it while a person is alive. And for years, we had believed that it was this, that the brain was making too much protein, probably because of some sort of genetic problem, and the protein was killing the neurons, the nerve fibers, and interfering with transmission. Just last week, Harvard researchers revealed a study that in animals that suggests a completely different thing going on. It suggests the possibility that the amyloid is actually a reaction to an infection in the brain, and that the brain makes the amyloid to try and stop the infection and wall off the bacteria. And then the presence of the amyloid causes the destruction. We still don't know. We absolutely do not know the cause of this disease. But I would like to point out that's just one cause. Other causes are small strokes, a very severely underactive thyroid can interfere with brain function. Severe vitamin B12 can cause dementia. So a brain tumor can cause dementia. So it is important to recognize that there are multiple causes of dementia, and some are curable. We do not have a cure for Alzheimer's disease, but there are other forms that can be cured. So if a family member has signs of dementia, get that person into the doctor for a diagnostic workup.
And what if you feel they have it and the doctor does not recognize it?
That's a tough one, because there is no precise, it's not like a chest x-ray. You take a chest x-ray and wow, you know, there's that tumor there. Here's what I would suggest. I suggest that if the initial workup is negative, you start keeping a log of signs that you see that you think are troublesome. And if there appears to be progression, if things get worse, or if some signs appear that are more serious, you get a second opinion. And you do it with a neurologist. You do it with someone who is experienced in the diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's. And by the way, the Alzheimer's Association can be very helpful in finding such a person.
A final question on this subject, because the big name that we all associate Alzheimer's with in the current time, I think, is President Ronald Reagan. And
right.
and as maybe his family should have done, as soon as he was diagnosed, he no longer spoke in public. He was seen in public, but that was about it. And even the last 4 or 5 years was not seen in public. What does it do? Do you forget how to eat? Do you forget how to talk? Is it not just forgetting things? Is it not just, do you totally forget who you are? How does the end come with this?
Well, it varies. And I can only relate to it in a personal way by telling you what I saw with my brother. He gradually became totally withdrawn, was unable to carry on a conversation in not the last stages, but the late stages. He would keep repeating the same thing again and again, and you would answer the question, and he would answer it again. He needed help to be dressed. Yes, he had to be fed. It's a devastating illness. I mean, literally, you are watching the spark die in front of your eyes. With you're not just watching the physical body decline. You are seeing the spark of life disappear. And I've got tears in my eyes right now thinking about it. It's a very, very, very sad thing, a difficult thing to witness. Now, I actually did talk to my brother throughout the stages about what he was experiencing and what he was feeling. And I can tell you that in the earlier stages, he was very, very upset. But in the very late stages, he really did not seem upset at all. Couldn't answer the questions, didn't understand my questions, and showed none of the emotional reactions that he had shown earlier. But I'd have to qualify that. That's just one case, and from what I hear speaking to others, every human being reacts differently.
Nancy Reagan gave a very poignant interview, and it sticks in my mind to this day. And just for people who don't know, Ronald Reagan was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 1994. This interview came in September of 2002 with Mike Wallace, and President Reagan ended up dying in June of 2004 after 10 years with the illness. So he was about a year and a half away from dying. You didn't see him anymore. At that point, they didn't even let him go to the office anymore for picture and photo ops. But I remember Mike Wallace asking her. Now, he was 8 years with the illness at this point. And Mike Wallace said, "Do you think he still knows you?" And she said, "I don't know." So, yeah. What do you think was going on? And that's about what she said. 8 years into the illness, do you think, because most people, you would guess they know you or they don't, is it signs that maybe they know you sometimes and maybe sometimes they don't?
Yes, and no. Again, it varies with the individual and it varies with the stage. At the very end, I had the sense that my brother did not know whom he was talking to. I sat in front of him. It's interesting because we knew that the end was near. My wife and I had a trip scheduled, as I recall. That was when we were, in fact, I know now for sure. She and I were scheduled to go climb the Everest Base Camp Trail. And the question was, can we leave? And I talked to my sister-in-law and about it, and I talked with my wife, and we all decided, yes, we would leave, but I would go say goodbye first. And I went to see him, and I had the sense that he was absolutely unaware of who I was or what I was saying. Pretty sad.
It is, because I think, and God bless her for doing this, Nancy Reagan, a president we all know. And to have that happen, and for her to be vocal about it, was very brave, I think. And
I agree.
And one of the things about that, and it was the second part of that Mike Wallace question, not just does he know you, and Mike said, have you said goodbye? And because I think they were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary is why this interview happened. And she said, no, very quickly, no. She said, he's there. So in look and in body and in voice, 8 years into this, are they still there? In that way that you can see them every day?
It all depends how you define there. I would say, I everybody has a different definition of the meaning of life. Some say if you've got a pulse and you're breathing, you're alive. If that's all I have, I don't want to be alive. I have a living will and an advance directive for care, and no one will ever be able to force breathing on me. They will not be allowed to put a central venous catheter in me. I have forbidden spoon feeding. If I cannot feed myself, my advance directive says that I may not be artificially fed. Because that's not living for me. It may be for someone else. And I think one of the things I'm so grateful for is that we are reaching that point in time and human development where others are now at least willing to allow for a difference in opinion. I can deny care now. It is legal for me in California to deny my care.
One thing I want to wrap up this also, and this is a very important conversation, and I understand this last question is going to be pure opinion, and I'm only coming back to President Reagan because people out there listening know what he looked like, they know what he sounded like, they are familiar with that. For a family right now who has the same issue with their family members, maybe just the beginning, or you yourself, and because, and obviously rightly, the Reagans did not let President Reagan go out in the last 4 or 5 years, what do you think, if you had seen President Reagan, because you know what he looked like in his day, if you would have seen him, if you would have went to see him in that last year, what would you have seen different than physically and mentally than the day he announced?
You would have seen a ghost. You would have. And what I'm doing is I'm going to describe what I saw with my brother now. And that may not be what I would have seen with President Reagan, but I suspect it would have been similar. It was a ghost. It was an outline of my brother. I recognized him. He did not look well physically at all because he was not eating. He declined very much physically. But, you know, it was my brother sitting there, empty. There was no there. You know what I mean? The spark was gone. He was breathing. He was fidgeting. He was fumbling. He was mumbling some. But that was not my brother. I retain a completely different image of my brother. And by the way, I would encourage people, if you have suspicions of dementia in a loved one, or if you have a confirmed situation, get connected. Connect yourself with other people, with experts in this area. Do not isolate yourself. This is not something from. I do not believe the person should be hidden. It's nothing to be ashamed of. And I think that the healthiest way to deal with this is to actually surround yourself with more people who can help you and support you than to isolate yourself.
How did you get through it mentally? Because I guess you let the doctors handle the treatment, but what can the family who brings them home, or in some cases they do end up in facilities or visits them, what right. can you do?
Well, number one, be honest about your own feelings. Grieve for what you have lost. Nancy Reagan said she did not say goodbye. He was still there. But I would bet that she was grieving for that part of him that she had already lost. Acknowledge those feelings. But also... be grateful for what you've had. You wouldn't be grieving if there wasn't richness in the relationship. I mean, we started this out by talking about the nuances of life, and I see this as absolutely no different. My friends who... I recently told a friend who lost his wife... she was an amazing woman, and he was grieving big time, and he wanted to know, you know, why is this hurting so much? And I said, because you had so much. She was such an amazing woman. Look what you've lost. And he said, I get it now. He needed permission to grieve.
For people who say they get over it, Alzheimer's, cancer, whatever it is that takes somebody away, do you ever really get over it?
Well, again, it just depends on how you define getting over it. I think of it as getting past it. Getting past it. Resuming life. Living for the future, not in the past. Do you ever get over it? My brother had the ugliest ties in the world, and I made his kids give me one of them, and I wear it from time to time. So just remind me, you know. So I have gotten past my brother's death. I still miss him.
And is that life? You the people coming, people going.
We're all going to go.
Do you ever fully, and this is a long ball with a minute 30 left, do you ever really wrap your mind that you'll leave? Do you ever really wrap your mind around the idea? You can say you do.
Well, that is a tough question to answer. I think about it all the time. I kid with my grandkids about it. I mean, hey, I'll be 80 in a few weeks. And I know I'm not going to live forever. This is life. I've been there. I'm going to die. I'm always amused when people say, she passed. No, she didn't pass. She died. And I am going to die. I am not afraid of it. It's going to happen. I'm curious about it. Gosh, I wish I knew what it was going to feel like. I don't waste a lot of time on that, only because I know I'm not going to get the answer.
It's fascinating, and it's always fascinating with you, Dr. Euline. These conversations, I think because they are conversational, are doing people a lot of good, and I can't thank you enough for coming on again.
It's always a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Art Euline, hope you enjoyed that. Taking a 10-minute break, coming back with Kathleen Willey. You're not going to want to miss that. Don't go anywhere.
Life are writing books, and they're boring. If you don't like my book, you'll say one thing, boy, have a good book.